Don't pull over, just turn the volume up. It's time for Roll Call with Chief Brian Dugan. We're calling out those who are bridging the gap to improve the lives and safety of others. Here now is your host, campus top cop, Brian Dugan.
Hello everyone, today we are at Roll Call with the Chief and we are going to talk to Holly Guastalli. Wow, say that quick, say that five times. Holly Guastalli, latent fingerprint specialist, and we have Monique Polisi here. I think, who's also a latent fingerprint specialist. I think we'll just stick with Holly and Monique as the easiest thing to do. What do you guys think?
Perfect.
I've struggled sometimes. So, you know, how long you've been here with the Tampa Police Department as latent fingerprint specialist, but you've been done more than just that. So, Holly, how long have you been here?
I've been with TPD for 2 years now.
Okay. And what did you originally start out as?
Actually, back home in Massachusetts, I started in the court system as a criminal and civil clerk.
Okay.
And then when I came down here, I worked at the Florida Department of Law Enforcement for approximately 3 years in the latent print discipline, and then came to TPD 2 years ago.
Okay, and you started here right as a latent fingerprint specialist?
Yes.
Okay, that's pretty cool. And Monique, what about you? How long have you been here? How did you start out and get into all the business?
I started out as a crime scene technician here, and I did that for 8 years. And I had a short stint as a latent print examiner in Pasco, and then came back home to TPD to do the latent fingerprint specialist role.
Oh, that is pretty cool. Yeah, now that you mentioned it, I do remember that you left and went to the other side and then finally saw the light and came back home to the Tampa Police Department. So that's good. So, you know, your roles here as a latent fingerprint specialist, you know, kind of tell me what that's all about for someone who's listening and, you know, really just kind of wonders because, you know, you see so many different TV shows and, you know, what's real in life, what's, you know, what's not.
We will receive fingerprints from crime scene technicians and officers from scenes and items that they've dusted, and we will analyze the fingerprints to determine if they are of comparison quality or not. If they are, we can do a direct comparison to a subject if a detective has someone in mind. We can also run the fingerprints in any of the three computer systems that we have to hopefully get a potential suspect. Then we will do a further comparison side by side underneath a magnifier glass and hopefully get an identification.
Okay, and so let's talk about the comparison quality. Holly, can you explain what exactly compare? Yeah, you're not getting off easy. You're not going to just sit here and not answer any questions. So this is going to be an interactive day. So tell me what you explain to me what the comparison quality of a print is. What does that mean?
Well, we receive prints off of various items of evidence. So it can range from porous to non-porous items, which would be pieces of paper, glass, and all of those items are processed using various chemical processing or dusting, as Mo said. And then from there, we'll analyze the print, taking in consideration, level 1, 2, and 3 detail, which would be the pattern type, ridge flow, the different distortions that could take place because, you know, our skin is pliable. So as soon as you touch something, your skin will tend to move. We also sweat, and we're in Florida, so we sweat a lot. Ridges on your skin is what secretes the is lined with pores and secretes sweat. So that sweat is essentially left behind on the items that we touch. From there, you know, as I said, we'll process those items, and that's essentially what we develop, the sweat. So luckily in Florida, like I said, we sweat a lot. So
okay, and then so if it's comparison quality, which means basically you can compare it to something else, right?
Right, so if there is no suspect in the case, you know, it will be run through one of the three databases. If there is, a detective can give us a name of a suspect. We can pull standards, known standards, which are previously recorded prints of that person, and then do a manual comparison under the glass.
Okay, so let's talk about the three systems that they may go in. What are the three systems, and how does all that work? You know, Mo, come on, this is interactive. Don't think you're going to bail on everything here.
The three systems we have are CAFIS, AFIS, and IAFIS. So CAFIS is a local database, and it searches Hillsborough County only, and we kind of piggyback off of Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office. So anyone that has a record within Hillsborough County should be in CAFIS. The next system that we would go to is AFIS, and that's the Automated Fingerprint Identification System that searches the state of Florida. So all of us are actually in AFIS. Our identifying number would just come up differently than an arrest record would, because it houses criminal and civil applicants. So law enforcement, doctors, teachers,
military
gun applicants for concealed weapons permits, everybody should be in the AFIS system. It just depends on whether you're criminal or civil, and you'll come up under a different number.
Okay, so before you get to the third, so basically if you go and apply for a job and they ask you to get fingerprinted, that would, your fingerprints would be in AFIS then?
Yes, exactly.
So anything that is, anytime you're fingerprinted and it's submitted for whatever reasons, it ends up in AFIS.
Yes, correct, for the state of Florida.
Okay.
And then beyond that, we would have IAFIS, which is the integrated AFIS, and that will search nationwide.
Okay. Now, what would, as a police officer, I've obviously been printed, so would my fingerprints be in the IAFIS too?
If you were printed out of state, yes,
oh, okay.
You would.
Okay. All right. So that's interesting. So do you guys get many fingerprint hits when you start running them through the systems and things like that?
Yes. The majority of our prints that are run through the system will fortunately hit and come back with a name for us to do a manual comparison to.
Okay.
So, yes, we do.
And then once those fingerprints are, once you get that hit, that's passed on to the investigators, and do you have, what is your role after once it's passed on to the investigators?
We'll report our findings to either the case detective or whoever is assigned to the case that we see in Versedex as lead, or even our district sergeant. And from there, they will sometimes let us know if it was the suspect or the victim or someone that they have no idea what kind of role they played in the case. Every once in a while, we'll see our names pop up in the DIL. So that's always like a nice kudos to see that we actually helped provide a name that solved the case and got some victims some closure.
Yeah, so the DIL, for those who don't understand, is a daily incident log. And basically what that is any notable incident that happens at the police department, it gets written up. And so we will see when we're able to solve a crime, they will put in the name of the fingerprint specialist who is able to basically solve that. So it certainly is a pretty cool thing. You know, we were talking a little bit earlier before we started. What is kind of one of the coolest things you've ever done as far as pulling fingerprints? What's, you know, kind of an interesting thing that kind of pops out of your mind of, you know, what you've done and captured a fingerprint off of?
Well, I think just in general, obviously the most satisfying for us is to solve any crime. But I would say homicides always have to be the most exciting.
I agree.
They tend to be, you know, some are high-profile cases, so that's always exciting to have finger, no pun intended, in that and solving those. But, you know, it's fun to just be able to know that you played an important role in solving any crime, but I would say homicides.
Yeah, we were talking earlier before we started the show with, you were able to find a fingerprint off of a machete. Just tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, it was actually it was a murder weapon that we had a blood print on, and I was able to process it, photograph it, you know, preserve the evidence, and essentially identify someone off that print.
Oh, see, that is really cool. That's, you know, and that's kind of, I'm sure that's very rewarding for you when you're able to actually assist in the investigation and it leads to a major clue and find some justice for the victim.
We had a bank robbery probably close to a year ago where the detectives had a certain subject in mind based off of video surveillance, and they were actively going after this person when Holly and I actually intercepted with a fingerprint identification that was somebody completely different. So we kind of blew the timeout whistle and told our detectives this name, and they're like, okay, well, that description totally matches the video as well, so let's follow that lead. So we potentially saved some innocent person from getting the business from TPD, and we got the correct guy.
No, I mean, that's really cool. I mean, when you think about it, it's quickly solving crimes, and like you said, you know, keeping the heat off of the innocent people, and that's just as important of what we do here. It's just as much about catching the bad guy as it is, you know, clearing the good guy, and that certainly is huge for you.
And that's why it's kind of, I think, at least extra rewarding, especially coming from the crime scene background, because fingerprints are so much quicker coming back for result-wise than DNA. Like, DNA is great, but it takes a significant amount of time in order to get results, even if it is rushed. And then, true, there's that little caveat that even identical twins have identical DNA, whereas fingerprints are unique to every single individual in the entire world. So no two people have ever been found to have the same fingerprint. And it's such a quicker process that we're able to close cases much quicker.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the fingerprint. You had talked earlier, Holly, about the sweat and all that stuff. Well, can you explain a little bit about, it was very interesting, you know, as a police officer, you know, I'm in my 29th year at the police department. You know, I had hair and less of a gut than when I started. But, one of the things I never, and I was at a murder trial a few years back, and someone, it was Susan DeLodge, actually sat down and testified and explained the loops and the swirls and all that stuff and the indication. It's very, very intriguing. So
swirls.
What's that?
Sorry, Chief.
Swirls, no, whirls, no. Sorry, you know?
We do like ice cream swirls.
Okay. All right. Well, you're sweating me now. Okay. And that's why we have you here. That's why I wasn't up testifying. So explain what I was talking about. Correct me and explain kind of what the whole thing is about.
Well, there are three pattern types of fingerprints, and it's loops, whirls, and arches.
All right, whirls and swirls. That was close. Go ahead.
They were. We'll give you a pass on that
one. All right,
one.
So what are the three again? I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Loops,
go ahead.
Loops, whirls, and arches.
Okay.
And there are different subcategories of each, of course, but those are the three basic ones that you'll find.
Okay. And everybody has them, and they're unique characteristics to everyone?
Everybody has them, yes, but some people will have either a combination of the three or a combination of two or just one. Like, I have loops and arches. I have no whirls.
Oh, you're unique then, huh?
I am, especially with the arches, because that's the rarest of the pattern types.
Interesting. So is that like...
I will get caught easier. That's
should
what
you
it
be
means.
Like Monique unique, or what do you think?
I have there? Never heard that before, Chief.
So there you go. I'm sure you haven't. So, whatever. Can we move along then? I guess I stepped right into that one. So. All right. So let's go back to what you did before you were here at the police department. You know, when you were at FDLE, what made you leave there and come here? I know we're a much cooler agency than FDLE is, and I could certainly see, you know, the attraction there. But, you did latent fingerprint specialist there. What's the difference, and without, you know, criticizing the either side, what's the difference between working there and working here?
There's a lot more direct contact with law enforcement. And I feel as though, you know, essentially it's the same role over there. You're identifying people and whatnot. It's just there's so much of a delay because they, are a state agency. So there's so much of a delay from when the crime happens to when you actually get the evidence to everything, you know, from there on out. And really they don't testify a whole lot. So being here and, you know, having the direct contact with law enforcement and really being able to essentially feel as though you're part of the entire investigation and then having the opportunity to testify on multiple occasions. I personally love that role more. I think it's more fitting for my personality and what I foresee myself doing.
And I'm sure the upside to it here is that you actually get to hear the outcome of the case, whereas there it's more scientific and you're just, you know, kind of putting information into databases and you don't ever really know what happens. There's no real conclusion to it.
Yes, exactly. And a lot of times, like I said, there's such a delay that, you know, I hate to say you don't feel as though you're really making any progress in a case, but unfortunately, with the time delay, a lot of the cases are closed out and... it's just much more exciting and much more exciting experience being able to be there and get it within, you know, 24 hours and solve a case.
Now, do you ever interact with a detective and they, you know, may not really know what they're looking for, and they just kind of explain to you, and that helps narrow down, you know, what items you'll try to get the prints off of and that type of stuff?
It does, especially if it's a vehicle, for instance. You always want to try to go for an interior print. That's always going to be more easily prosecutable than an exterior print. Although we don't ignore the exterior prints, because that can always lead to some kind of investigative lead where they can get a name and go question that person.
Okay, that's pretty cool. And so, Monique, when you, you know, getting back what you did, you were a crime scene tech prior to this. So what was that like? You did that for what, 8 years, did you say?
8 years, yes,
okay.
Sir.
Okay, what was that like?
It was exciting. It was almost, with the exception of the officers, you were kind of first on scene. So you were able to assess the scene, get an idea of what was evidence, what was not. You photograph the scene, document it exactly how you find it. And it's, again, with the follow-through to court, your pictures are up on this ginormous screen, and you're essentially painting the picture of the crime that happened to the jury. So I took a lot of pride in my work, knowing that each scene could potentially be in front of a jury of however many members, or even just a judge. And then with the fingerprint evidence, you take your time to painstakingly process whether it's powders or chemicals, like Holly said, and it can be a tedious process. It's not necessarily hard, but it is time-consuming. You have to photograph in between each step. There's different chemicals that you can or can't use. It determines what steps you take, how long you have to wait in between. And then just documenting all your work along the way, which likes to get attacked by defense attorneys. And sometimes it's challenging, but I get they have a job to do just like we do. So defending our work, especially in latents, is a lot more intense than it was in crime scene.
Yes.
Crime scene, it was kind of like I came, I saw, I did, I collected, and that was it. Latent testimony is a lot more in-depth.
Scientific-based.
Scientific, absolutely. Yeah. They get very defensive. But to me, I just take it as a teaching opportunity, and I talk to the jury members just like we're talking now, probably a little bit more formally. But just try to put things into layman's terms, or taking it from a perspective that they can understand easily. As to what we do and why we do it.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. When you're testifying in court, do you use the word ginormous or
no?
Oh, okay.
I try not to.
Kind of threw me off when you had that ginormous screen there. I wasn't sure. That's very intriguing. So, what was one of the coolest things that when you were a crime scene tech? What's a story that kind of bounces out at you, or some of the things like that?
Okay, so I have two that come to mind. One is I was fairly new, and I believe I was still in training. I was within a year, and my trainer and I had a double homicide, but the bodies were not there. It was actually an attempted cleanup of a double homicide. But the short version of it is that we were in that house with no AC for a week and in Tyvek suits. It was a sweaty disaster, and probably about 10 to 12 hour shifts, and we just went back every day until everything was done. And we did everything forensically possible to that house that we could have, as far as photographs, fingerprint evidence, trajectory for blood analysis, and we collectively as a team, of course, were able to catch the guy that did it, and he was prosecuted. So that was extremely rewarding. The other one was a shotgun suicide in a bedroom.
It's one of my favorites.
And the bedroom door was about 12 feet away from where the decedent was, and out the bedroom door and around the corner and down the hallway, stuck to the wall, was his eyeball.
Really?
Really.
Ugh, that's gruesome. That is gruesome. I don't think the average person really understands some of the things that we see. And, you know, we have a sense of humor about it. I think that's the only thing that keeps us sane, because if you really thought about the whole process, you probably, you know, we'd all have major issues. And you kind of just look at it more from a factually standpoint to kind of insulate yourself from losing your mind, because of some of the things we see. And so it is kind of interesting, the things that stick out, some of the science behind gunshot wounds is really kind of crazy.
It is fascinating.
Yeah.
And then I've seen some that don't go as well. People that have to attempt it twice.
Yeah.
And that's always a sad day, too. Or somebody that just has a failed attempt and they're actually still breathing and the person survives the attempt. So it can go either way. Yes, it is fascinating, but the science behind it as well, you never know what you're going to see.
Yeah. So what about, so I think so many people have a preconceived notion about fingerprints and crime scenes and everything else. And, you see so much on TV now. That's the big thing with, what's the NCIS and CSI and everything else. And usually my wife tells me, how come you don't look like they do? And I'm so unfair. I tell her I used to look like that, but that's a lie too. But so other than our physical appearances, what's the difference between, what happens on TV and what happens in real life?
I would say the biggest difference is the time that it takes.
Yeah, they solve it within an hour.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. I wish it did. That'd be nice. The time, and I would say computers don't do everything for us.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in latents, I think a lot of people, a lot of aspects of forensics, computers do a lot of the process for them. So, in latents, they don't. They don't get, it doesn't do everything for us. Yes, it can give us a suspect's name. No, it doesn't solve a crime. Unfortunately, our eyeballs take a lot of beating, and, every single print goes under a magnifier glass for us here at TPD, and we do manual comparisons of everything.
Yeah, there's certain things still have to be done the old-fashioned way, and that's how you determine whether it's a comparison quality, right?
Absolutely.
And so you have to, in order to put it into one of those three systems, you have to look at it and say, okay, this would go, or we don't just run everything through, correct?
Correct, yep. It goes to an analysis process first,
mm-hmm.
And then from there we'll go in a system if it's of value.
But that's an actual person, like you guys, doing the analysis and everything.
Yes, yep. And then one of us, an actual person, will have to enter it into the computer system, and then eventually one of us will have to put it under a magnifier glass, and then one of us will have to go testify. So it's... computers do have a lot of advancements in the forensic technology world, but unfortunately, latent prints are pretty much an old school version of forensics. But I like it that way.
Yeah, the computer systems are a great investigative tool and an aid to give us potential people to look at and compare, but it is still a person that makes the identification and then a second latent examiner that makes the verification. So we always have that checks and balances system in place to make sure that we are IDing the correct person and nobody's being missed, nobody's being mis-ID'd, things
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, it's interesting that, it's job security for you guys. Because I could walk out the door tomorrow and this place wouldn't skip a beat. You guys don't show up. You guys don't show up for work. Everything comes to a screeching halt. We wouldn't be able to solve any crimes through fingerprints. So, you're clearly much more important and valuable than I am to this operation. So that's interesting.
Well, you might be the first to say that.
I don't know. I'm sure some of my staff would verify that for you. So, there's no doubt about that. And, all joking aside, that's why I think we're so successful here as a police department, because of it's the people out there doing the work. It's the cops on the street. It's the people behind the scenes like you guys that really don't get the credit that you should, because so many of these things, these crimes would not get solved without the verification that you guys provide. And, when you look at the success and the 77% reduction in crime we've had since 2003, it's more than just the cops on the street. It's the people working behind the scenes, making sure that these cases are prosecutable. I mean, you guys are sometimes the major link that actually makes a case prosecutable, and it's the state attorney's office, the prosecutors and the entire system that is part of the success in our city and why it's so safe from the way it used to be. So I think that's very important. So I think I just laid the case for the mayor getting rid of me and keeping you guys. So I'm sure she's going to take my salary and divvy it up between you guys. So. But so what else? What else do you think that people would be shocked? We just have a few minutes left. What do you think people would be shocked to know about what you do?
I think, just the other difference like between TV is that it's not really one person that does all the roles. It's not, you're not going out to the scene and comparing the evidence and going out and making the arrest like some of the shows depict. Each person has their specific role.
Yeah, that's true. And they all drive fancy cars and dress really nice and all that stuff.
Yeah, you must have missed the Hummer that was in the garage today.
Yes, I did. Yes. I did. Trust me, if there was a Hummer in the garage, I would be driving it. Okay, there's got to be some perks to being chief of police. And trust me, that's not one of them. So, you know. But, you know, in closing, you know, to someone who's young and thinking about getting into this line of work, well, what advice would you have for them? Because I know you both have college educations. Some of us are working on our PhD, you know, I guess. You know. So Holly going to school, I guess, you know, she's not overeducated enough. Good for you. You're going to go back again.
Thank you.
But what word of advice would you have for someone who is thinking about getting into this?
I would just say, make sure it's really what you want to do. Go out there, you know, interview places, really find a place that's comfortable for you that you can call home. It's important to really enjoy, you know, what you do, where you go to work every day, who you work with. Also go out there and, you know, work for free. Unfortunately, you got to intern. You really have to intern. A lot of interns will find themselves, you know, oh, I don't have the stomach for this. Latents are boring.
That's not true.
What I want to do.
You know what? That's a very good point. I think, you know, interning would really let you know up front, because you'd hate to spend all this money on an education and go, oh, that's not what I want to do.
Yes, and I think that's most important. And I know, you know, being in school and a lot of kids work through their college, you'd still have to put away some time to really intern and find out, you know, what you like. And with forensics, there's different aspects. You know, there's ballistics, there's tumor marker identification, there's toxicology. So there's a lot of different avenues that you can go. So really just, I would say that was probably most important. Intern and, you know, talk to people, find out what you like, what you don't like, and go from there.
Yeah, because you might find that you like the lab more so than the field.
Yes.
So that's another way to think about it. And like Holly said, intern, volunteer, go to different departments, ask if you can do a ride-along in different areas, whether it's crime scene, latents, patrol. The medical examiner's office may even let you shadow their physicians for a day or so. But yeah, definitely get your feelers out, market yourself, and definitely decide if this is what you want to do before you invest hugely into the education part of it.
No, they got some great advice. Unfortunately, that wraps up today's show. We are running out of time, and I would like to thank Holly and Monique for joining me today. It's certainly been educational. I've learned a lot, and I think some of our listeners are really going to gain a lot of out of this. You know, make sure you join us next week, and we'll hear from how our community investment grant is going to make a positive impact in Tampa. And that'll be it for today with Roll Call with the Chief. Well, I'm your Chief of Police, Brian Dugan. Until next time, let's be careful out there.
Roll Call with Chief Brian Dugan is directed and produced by Janelle McGregor, with technical assistance provided by Eddie Durkin, Steve Haggerty, and Derek Lang. Keep the conversation going on social media, following @TampaPD on Facebook and Twitter, and use the hashtag Roll Call.